RidgieAllen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TriggerWarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on RidgieAllen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
And would you believe it, I just remembered at the last second to record the program. I might have had a heavy night of it last night. Although I'm not going to get into that. Just remembered to start recording just as the jingle was firing. Anyway, it's as I said, it's a bit muggy, a bit overcast here in Salford and Greater Manchester. There is a lot going on, though. There's no silly season anymore. The silly season is a thing of the past. Lots to talk about today, and I've already given you the Twitter handle, so I look forward to hearing from you this Sunday morning, August 4th. Right, let's ixnay the old theme tune then. Yeah, right. I see a lot of tweets already about the shootings in El Paso, in Texas, and in Dayton, of course, Ohio. And I'll get into that, I suppose, straight away. It's very difficult to talk about these things with any authority, because I don't have any authority. But I can tell you what's being reported at the moment. You might be waking up to this. 20 people were killed and 26 injured in a shooting in El Paso, which, of course, is a Texan city. The governor there, a man called Greg Abbott, has described it as one of the most deadly days in the history of that famous city in Texas. Now, it happened at a Walmart store near the Cielo Vista Mall, which is a few miles away from the border with Mexico. So it's only a few miles away from the Mexican border. They've got a 21-year-old guy in custody. They have said, and this is moving, of course, so I'm speaking to you live at a minute past 11 on Sunday morning. By the time we finish, and by the time you might hear this on YouTube or iTunes later on, things will have developed. But as it stands, they are saying the man is 21 years old, the suspect, and that he is in custody, and that he's a resident of the Dallas city of Allen, that's A-L-L-E-N, which is about 650 miles east of El Paso. So the guy is way out of his jurisdiction, I suppose. They've called him, or they've named him, as Patrick Crucius. Patrick Crucius. And they've released some CCTV images said to be of Patrick Crucius, which show him wearing a dark T-shirt, wearing ear protectors, and holding what looks to be like an assault-style rifle. So that's El Paso. And only a few hours after that, 9 people were shot dead and at least 16 injured in a shooting in Dayton, Ohio. Lots of reports came in around about 1 o'clock local time there, which is about 5 o'clock in the morning here in the UK, of a shooting outside a bar in the Oregon district of Dayton, Ohio. Police said they killed the man at the scene, and casualties have been taken to a number of hospitals. Crazy, right? These shootings are crazy. We've had Dunblane in this country, of course, in Scotland, but we're not familiar with the... Well, I suppose we've become a bit more familiar in recent times with London Bridge and stabbings and that, but this is kind of alien territory for us in the UK. Let me just read you something that I found interesting on the Daily Mail's website this morning, dailymail.co.uk. 19 minutes before the shots rang out in El Paso, the man responsible for the killings, so they've determined he's responsible, not that he's allegedly responsible, the man responsible, uploaded a twisted and seething anti-immigrant manifesto to an online forum outlining his sickening motives. 2,300 words, apparently, attributed to P. Crucius on one website, speaks of a perceived, quote, Hispanic invasion of Texas. And apparently the manifesto is a detailed plan to segregate ethnic minorities into separate territories of the country. And the manifesto allegedly expresses a belief that white people will soon be ethnically replaced. And it goes on, the Mail, to say that it's 21-year-old Patrick Crucius of Allen in Texas. The manifesto. Right. Here's El Paso Police Chief Greg Allen. Okay. He's the police chief, and he's talking about the manifesto.
The ages and genders of all these people injured and killed are numerous. in the age groups, the situation, needless to say, is a horrific one. It has a nexus at this point in time to a hate crime. The FBI will be looking into that with the other federal authorities. But right now we're looking at potential capital murder charges for this individual. Right now we have a manifesto from this individual that indicates to some degree it has a nexus to potential hate crime.
Yeah, to a potential hate crime. Now, look, I'm not going to give the standard lecture about the Truther Industrial Complex and what the Truther Industrial Complex is doing and the claims that it is making. I'm not going to give the standard lecture. You are a smart human being. You make your own mind up. It's very neat, this. I know, and I understand why people say it's very neat and it's packaged beautifully. The manifesto that gives the entire raison d'etre, the entire motive of the shooter. It's wonderful because it ties it all up in a neat box. It's a bit like the ending of a Scooby-Doo episode, isn't it? Right, it's all there. And that absolves the media then of any responsibility to try and find out by itself, independently, who the man is, Mr. Crucius, who he is, where he came from, what he was doing. The manifesto is great. It's like, there you go, media. This is all you need to know. And that's very neat, and I don't like it. And I agree with that. It's a bit Scooby-Doo, that. So what about this manifesto, then? How much credence should we give it? Here's Ben Collins of MSNBC. Ben Collins has been looking into the manifesto. Ben.
It was posted on 8chan, which is an extremist website, ostensibly. Hours before the shooting, it was deleted shortly after the shooting happened. It's a wildly anti-immigrant manifesto. It's 3 pages of hatred against immigrants and people, you know, viewed as basically invaders to the United States, where they believe, and people generally on this extremist forum where these people get radicalized, believe that there is only so much space or only so many jobs in this country, and it's being replaced by Mexican immigrants. And in his case, he also believed automation in this thing. So it is a racist and anti-immigrant manifesto that was posted on a site known exclusively for that. And by the way, this is not the first time this has happened. The Christchurch shooter, who killed 49 people, posted his manifesto on the same website. 4chan, which is like a sister site to 8chan, a month after that Christchurch shooting, there was a manifesto posted by the person who shot up a synagogue in San Diego. And last week, the Gilroy shooter, he told people to read a manifesto that has been posted to 4chan and 8chan literally hundreds of times. It's from the 1890s. I'm not sure he came about that in a library. So this is a real issue. There is a body count associated with this website now. And I think people are going to start having to look into it.
Wow, that's an incredible thing to say. Any reporter delivering a report, there's a body count associated with this website. A body count. That's a bit deep, that, to get into this morning in the time that we have today, you and me. I'm going to leave that for earlier in the week coming. I'm going to give my great friend and colleague Hayden Hewitt, who's one of the men behind one of the biggest websites in the world, LiveLeak. I'm going to ask Hayden to come on and talk about that. So body counts associated with the website. That's a bit spooky, that. So he's mentioned a few things there. He's mentioned 4chan and 8chan and A-chan. What are these things, 4chan, 8chan, 8chan? I don't know. Ben Collins, MSNBC.
They're just extremist forums now. They used to be places where people could anonymously post things like art, or it was a big anime forum to start. You know, 4chan has Japanese roots. 2chan, its predecessor, had that too. 8chan was created because 4chan, which is a wildly racist place on its politics forum, was simply not enough for them. It was 8chan is legions worse. And it is exclusively a place where people post about the upcoming race war, basically. That's where today, after the shooting, the shooter is viewed as a martyr. And that's what they're talking about right now on that website.
Now, if you use one of these websites because you want to communicate privately with others, you might be pretty horrified and you might be pretty scared to hear media reporters, journalists, saying that there's a body count associated with the website and saying that the users of the website are now identifying Mr. Crucius as some sort of martyr. So So if you use 8chan, 4chan, 8chan, 2chan, you might be thinking, wow. You might also be forgiven for saying, I wonder why MSNBC or CNN or Fox News, why don't they get in touch with me or try to get in touch with someone who uses these websites to give us a little bit of balance here? Because I use the website and I do talk about immigration and I don't. Just in case you think I'm saying that I do. I certainly do not. I don't know anything about these websites. But if I did use the website, I might be saying, well, I use it and I use it because I want to have open discussions with people without censorship. That's why I use it. And now they're lumping me in with somebody who took an assault rifle into Walmart. These are dangerous times. Why haven't they tried to get somebody who uses the website as a bit of balance? Because there's a narrative being created here around the internet and around free speech on the internet and how dangerous it might be that people want to communicate privately on websites or whether they want to use browsers like Tor or whatever. This is what's happening. Okay? So, again, a bit deep to get into today. We will get into it in the week. So they're referring to people as martyrs, it's a dangerous website, dangerously racist, and we need to look into it, says the press. Now, Beto O'Rourke is a presidential candidate, he's a Democrat, and he's a former Texas congressman, and he believes that the rhetoric of people like President Donald J. Trump and others leads directly to the radicalization of white supremacists like the alleged shooter. So this is where it's going, you see. It goes down this road all the time. Now forget about the truth or industrial complex and the morons who are already putting posts out and they get hundreds of thousands of views saying that this whole thing was a hoax that never happened and all this crap. Forget all that nonsense. Leave it to one side, park it. Assuming that this guy Crucius did do it, and it's fair to assume that people were shot to death, and it's fair to assume that somebody did it. Assuming this guy did it, and assuming that Brenton Tarrant was the man behind the shooting in New Zealand, what's very interesting is it's the narrative that follows the chaos and the carnage. And the narrative is, it is hate speech is very dangerous, and hate speech leads directly to this massive loss of life. So presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke basically lays this one right at the feet of the U.S. President Donald J. Trump. Beto O'Rourke.
What I'm hearing from statements from the El Paso Police Department, preliminary indications that this is motivated by hatred, by racism, by an intolerance that is foreign to El Paso, and in fact had to be brought somewhere else into this community to do something like what we are seeing right now. And so I would just say that in addition to everything that we're doing for our fellow El Pasoans right now and meeting them in this time of suffering and need and crisis, in addition to making sure that we change our laws so that it's harder for something like this to happen again, I think we also have to ask ourselves about the level of hatred and racism that we're seeing in this country right now that could lead to an event like the one that we saw here today. And that is on all of us to both call out and to stop.
Yeah, he was cut off abruptly there. To call out and to stop people expressing sentiments deemed to be hateful. Because if we don't, those hateful statements will induce somebody who's full of hate to take a gun and take it to Walmart. And I don't like that, of course, for too many reasons, again, to get into here. We've gotten into it too many times on the programme. It's 15 minutes past 11. My friend and colleague, Patricia Braunschweiler, a great friend of mine who's in Zurich in Switzerland, she tweets, "This is interesting because witnesses of other mass shootings have said the same thing, but the reports that come out seem to ignore them." And she quotes one of the reports this morning. "Earlier in the day, officials said they had received reports of multiple shooters." That's right. You often hear from people in the vicinity that they were sure there was more than one shooter. And that's, you know, that's, it's a grave possibility. And then you're getting into the realms of false flag terrorism, even if it's domestic terrorism. So when I criticise the truth or industrial complex as a whole, don't pigeonhole me and say or think even that I dismiss out of hand the possibility that it's a false flag. Don't be stupid. I've been doing these programs for many years. I know that we have proof, or near as damn it proof, that in the past intelligence agencies have murdered people, right, and made it look like others, that not every shooting is genuine and not every shooter. I mean, I've only gotten into this very recently on the program with the hypnotherapist Jonathan Ryle. Like, I believe the cinema, the famous cinema shooting, Adam Lanza, was that the guy's name? I believe that would be one where there's a definite possibility of at least a Manchurian candidate and at least other shooters involved. I don't dismiss this stuff. This is a totally independent radio show that deals with this in the absence of the mainstream media dealing with it. So Patricia raises a brilliant point. Brilliant point. There have been people in El Paso saying, they seem to be cogent people, clear-minded people saying, pretty sure two shooters. Now, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know. Can only speculate. Maybe there were more than one shooter. Maybe the guy had help. Or maybe something even more sinister is going on. But I don't know. I don't have any proof. I'm interested in, after the event, what happens then? What comes out of it? What do governments, local governments, what do they propose? Because the proposals are truly frightening, with the implications they have for free speech. As far as gun laws go, I've been asked 1,000 times, what do you think, Robert, Richie, what do you think? Look, I grew up in Ireland, you know. I grew up in a place called Ballybeg in Waterford in Ireland. We were on the edge of the countryside. We were a couple of miles away from Waterford city centre, maybe 3, and we were on the edge of the countryside. Between us and Cork, there was countryside. And some people had shotguns and they had licenses and they went and shot rabbits and they shot pigeons occasionally. But they would have been very rare. We never experienced guns. I live in the UK now. I spent 9 years in Spain and it took a bit of getting used to seeing the police pretty heavily armed wherever we went. And then I got used to it. People's rights to own guns. Look, again, I don't have time to get into this morning. But a very important piece of legislation goes back to the late 19th century in the United States, and that was the Posse Comitatus Act. And that was signed by President Rutherford B. Hayes. The Posse Comitatus Act basically said to the citizens of the United States that the military would never police private citizens, would never police cities and townships in the US. They would never do that, okay? That local law enforcement would always be responsible for policing in towns and villages and in cities, whatever the size. That the military would never police domestic, would never enforce domestic policies, basically. And people across the United States have seen over the last few decades how that act has basically been ripped up. And how the police have become hyper-militarized, more aggressive, more vicious, and have been policing on behalf of the state and not on behalf of private citizens, because the police are supposed to be there to protect private people, the property, and all that, and that famous oath that they take, right? We swear to protect the people and the property of the people and all of that. The police don't do that. The police increasingly protect massive corporations and protect corrupt government, and they increasingly look like robocops or, you know, hyper-militarized men and women wearing super weapons and all this sort of stuff. It's terrible. So I don't blame people in the United States who want to keep weapons and want to store weapons, and I don't blame them when they feel that these shootings, most of them genuine shootings, some of them, you know, maybe not genuine, are often then used as the basis to say to people, well, you can't have this type of gun, you can only have that type of gun. Now, I don't like guns, I don't want one, I wouldn't have one. If we were allowed to keep handguns in the UK, which we're not, after Dunblane, the Dunblane massacre, look it up if you don't know what happened there, the law was changed in this country to make owning a handgun illegal. I don't want a handgun. However tyrannical the state is getting, and it is tyrannical, I don't want a gun. Don't want one. That's me personally, right? But I understand why people do want them in the US, and I understand and I think they have legitimate concerns about the attempt to change the law to take their guns away from them. And I know that's very general what I've just said. It's broad strokes. I know it's much more complicated than I've put it there. But I understand the state gets increasingly tyrannical. The police get more and more out of control. They do. Shooting people point blank dead. Unarmed people. We see it all the time on the websites that haven't yet been banned. If you're an American citizen, you think, holy God, you know. Maybe I will get a semi-automatic weapon. So I don't know what's happened in Texas and in Dayton, Ohio. It's horrendous. What I'm interested in is what happens next. Going after websites, looking to increase the powers of the state to close down websites. If somebody says, well, it's dangerous because there are conversations happening on this website that might be a danger. Hate speech is going on this website. It might be a danger. Therefore, we have to close it down. We have to ban certain types of speech. We have to ban certain types of language. We can't talk about immigration. Immigration has been weaponized now in so many different ways. And one of the ways it's been weaponized is that people are being condemned as bigots and as racists if they talk about it. And of course, often they are the worst off people in the world. And here you have a great irony, because you have liberals or progressives who want to protect poor people, who want social justice, who want equality. And they're saying, you know, we've got to bring everybody up. We've got to liberate people from poverty. Well, while at the same time telling people who are very badly off and in very bad, dire circumstances, telling them, oh, you can't talk about immigration. You can talk about anything, but you can't talk about immigration. You can't talk about the fact that, you know, your towns and your villages and your areas are under enormous pressure because of an increase in migration in your area. You can't talk about that because to do that is racist and is bigoted. And the great irony of that, of course, is that way back when we had real socialists, genuine socialists, right, not only in politics, locally, I wouldn't have said nationally, but locally, migration was a real concern for genuine socialists, not liberals, not lefties, but socialists, who knew that areas, towns, cities that were disadvantaged already or had problems were going to be enduring even more difficult problems, and the problems were going to get worse if there was an influx of economic migrants into those areas. For years, socialists talked about that. Back in the 1980s, Tony Benn in the UK would have talked about that, the problem with joining the European Union and opening the doors of the UK to other EU member states, where people from those countries could come to the UK and compete for jobs with the indigenous population. No good comes of it. There's nothing racist about that. So what you have today is these horrible shootings, people killed, and you have people on the progressive left basically coming out to say, right, we've got to stop this. We can't have this anymore. We've got to stop saying these things. We've got to stop talking about these things. We've got to close down websites. We've got to give more powers to the state to snoop on people and on what they are saying and on what they are thinking so we can stop it. And again, no good comes of that. And that's about all I can say about those shootings this morning, really. All right, this is Sunday View on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, the TuneIn app, and multiple other platforms. This is Radiohead. The time is 25 past the hour. Back in a couple of minutes with more. Oh, by the way, keep those tweets coming in. I'm going to read some of them now when I come back. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'll read your tweets, and then we'll move on to the front pages of the UK newspapers. All righty. Hey, music from Radiohead on The Richie Allen Show, Sunday, August 4th, 2019, broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my own website. I said this already, but I'll say it again. And the programme is on multiple platforms around the world. You can hear it You can catch up with it on iTunes. It's on Spotify as well. It's on the Truth Seeker app. Terrific app. I recommend you download that. And Podomatic.com, where the program has been the most listened to program on Podomatic.com in news and politics. It's been number one for 4 years now. We get about 200,000 downloads a week through the podcast. That's minimum, by the way. Love that. Hi to Cave Hillbilly. How you doing, Cave Hillbilly? To Danny Warden. How you doing, Danny? To Mr. Sin, who says, Richie, when there's an Islamic terrorist attack, the media never points any fingers or blames any presidents. That's a very good point. Hi to Cartoon Drunk. Good morning, who says, I don't think sites on the dark web accessed with an onion browser can be shut down. Because of the encryption, they would have to ban the internet completely, says Cartoon Drunk. That's a very good point as well. Now, I don't know much about that. I tried to read up on browsers like Tor and what they do. But I'm very suspicious, see. I'm very suspicious, see. Because I think to myself, when you get these claims, oh, use this browser, it is completely and utterly invisible. Nobody will ever see you on there. Now, I would have no real reason to use one of these browsers. And I would be very scared about using one. I would be very scared about using one because I believe that there are aspects of the intelligence agencies, intelligence services, parts of them, people working within them, who like to fit people up. Now, I'm not important. I'm not suggesting anybody would want to fit me up, right? But I would say to anybody who is, you know, a whistleblower, somebody who is a researcher, I'd be very careful about using these browsers because they might fit you up. You know, they might claim that you were accessing certain sites using one of these private browsers. I'd be very concerned about that and I would take that very seriously. Good morning to David Stanford. Good morning, David. And thanks to my friend Mwinga, who's sent me a clip from NBC. Is it NBC? Is it MSNBC? WNBC? Is it WNBC? I'm not sure who it is. But anyway, it's a witness speaking on American news, talking about multiple shooters. I haven't even pre-listened to the clip, which is reckless by me. It's reckless, I tell you. But have a listen anyway.
New Jersey, a little kid runs in and talking about some active shooter in Walmart, but me and the guy that's that works there, we're just like, he's a kid, so we didn't believe him. So I walk out the mall, go to Foot Locker. I hear, bah, bah. I got my lights carried, so I pull my gun out. And I just started hiding. They closed the Foot Locker. And some people went there, they were so scared, they just lifted the cage, and they just dipped. So I ran with them, and I just tried to make my way to the parking lot. And I see a whole bunch of kids just running around, you know, without their parents and stuff. So I got my bag in my hand. I'm trying to pick them up one by as many as I can, just run out. But they're so, like, you know, anxious. They're, like, jumping out of my hand. So ain't much I could do for the kids. So I just made my way out. And when I got out, I guess one of the cops thought I was a shooter or something. So I had to, like, show him my clip and stuff, show him it was the book. I got my license carried. He said I was fine. Go out. I called a friend, telling him to pick up my gun. And I'm here now, but it was just a whole bunch of kids up in there. I'm sorry, I'm shaking. But it was a whole bunch of kids in there. And I just hope nothing happened to the kids because they were out their parents and stuff. I tried to pick up as many as I could and bring them out with me. But
now, Glenn, obviously we've heard about stuff like this happening across the country. You being in a situation where you're seeing it here in El Paso, like, how does that make you feel?
Shit, I'm in the military, so when I hear gunshots, I just think the pool. You know, take cover, save whoever I can. But I was just so worried about those kids, man, because ain't no telling. Because I heard it was more than one shooter. I heard it was four. And I'm just worried about those kids. I wasn't even really worried about it. I was trying to pick up the kids, man. I wasn't really worried.
Yeah, he said he heard there were four shooters. Apologies for the audio. I didn't listen to that during the Radiohead tune, which I should have done. But he basically says he's a veteran, that he heard there were four shooters. You see, whatever the truth is, eventually, when, presuming that this guy Crucius is going to be charged with these murders and then eventually tried and convicted of it, people will say, oh, there were reports of shooters, multiple shooters. And what the police will say, and there is some merit to this, they will say, look, during these events when people panic and somebody's running around with a gun, there will be misreporting. People will say stuff like, oh, I'm sure there was more than one shooter. And it gets out there and then people take it as fact, and people shouldn't take it as fact because we can't be sure and all the rest of it. So that's the way it goes, you know. All right. Okay. Let's move on. Let's have a look at the front pages of the Sunday newspapers. This is Sunday View. The time is exactly 27 and a half minutes to midday on Sunday. Sunday Telegraph leads with this story. The headline is MPs told It's too late to stop no deal. It's too late to stop no deal. The new government's Brexit strategy. This is right across the newspapers today. Most newspapers going with Brexit today. I know. You can yawn. We'll breeze right through it. The Sunday Telegraph is saying that MPs have been told that it is too late to stop the UK leaving. It's too late, baby. It's just too late. Without a deal on October 31st, the paper says Dominic Cummings, who's Boris Johnson's right-hand man on Brexit, has briefed MPs that the opposition has missed the chance to force an election before the deadline. And apparently, in one meeting, Cummings warned that European Union leaders like Emmanuel Macron, the French president, think that we're bluffing or believe that we will cancel the referendum result, but we won't, says Dominic Cummings. They don't realise that if there is a no-confidence vote in September or October, we'll call an election for after October 31st and we'll leave anyway. See? So this is all allegedly. This is all allegations. Dominic Cummings, one of Johnson's closest aides, is saying if there is a no-confidence vote and if it succeeds in September or October, we'll call an election for after October 31st and we'll leave on October 31st anyway. That's what they're alleging in the Sunday Telegraph. Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online. Brendan O'Neill, he was on Sky News this morning. What's going on, Brendan?
So Dominic Cummings, according to various leaked reports and conversations that have been overheard, apparently Boris Johnson's senior advisor, Dominic Cummings, says that no deal is going to happen and there's no way to stop it. And it's just too late to stop it. And what's interesting about this report is that it also there is a poll that has been done, an ORB poll, which shows that 46% of people agree that if the European Union refuses to reopen negotiations on the withdrawal agreement, then we should leave without a deal. That's a very significant number of people, and very interesting because I think what it reflects is that lots of people think that the true problem at the moment is the intransigence of the European Union and its stubborn refusal to come back and renegotiate some of these things. What I can't work out about the Boris government is the extent to which they are serious about leaving without a deal or whether they are raising the no-deal spectre as a way of getting both the European Union back to negotiating table and also as a way of getting MPs to vote through whatever deal Boris comes up with. So I can't work out if they're using no deal or if they're seriously committed to no deal. And we'll have to see, I think.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We're not leaving without a deal. We're not leaving full stop. And any deal that is negotiated between the UK and the European Union will be the oft-mentioned Brexit in name only. It will not be a genuine leaving. This is the thing. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about here. I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you. Listen to me. Had a laugh on Friday, had a giggle on Friday. Was listening to talk radio just after the paper review. And talk radio presenter Mike Graham had a Lib Dem MP on. Her name is Christine Jardine. She's from Edinburgh. Had a good laugh at this. She compared leavers to children who don't know what they're doing. I suppose it makes a change from calling leavers bigots and racists, I suppose.
Why can't you just accept that the majority of the people want to leave?
Can I ask you a question?
No, he asked you a bloody question, love. Why can't you accept the country voted to leave? It would appear by an average of all the most recent polls taken, that people still want to leave. Why can't you get that around your thick skull, love? I would have said to her. Here's Christine Jardine.
I'm a parent. And
so am I.
For 23 years, my child has said to me, I want to do that. And if I think that it's dangerous, then I say, well, no, I don't think that's a good idea.
So your child is 23 now?
No, yeah. The country is in a position... We're in a very dangerous economic and social position.
Very dangerous. I don't want to go out today, to be honest. It's so dangerous, I don't even want to go outside the back door.
Because of the austerity that would be created by Brexit, right. Because of the social problems that would be created by Brexit. So do you think that I should just say, OK, let's do it?
So now you're moving the argument from everyone who voted to leave is a racist bigot to everyone who voted to leave. Hang on. So you're now saying everyone who voted to leave is like a child who doesn't understand anything. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Well, that's what you just said.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yeah, I think the Remainers have realised that calling people racist, calling them bigots, calling them hate mongers because they wanted to leave hasn't worked, and it's only entrenched people and made them even more determined to want to leave. So the new tack is, well, you just hadn't a clue what you were doing, and we're here to protect you, like your mommies and your daddies. It's crazy. The Observer, front page headline, secret report reveals government fear of schools chaos after no-deal Brexit. More project fear. Fear, 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 fear. We can't have a no-deal Brexit because there'll be chaos in our schools, I tell you. Exams will be disrupted. We won't have fresh food for school meals. This is a five-page document, and it's marked official sensitive. And it's marked with the instruction, do not circulate. Right. It raises the possibility of teacher absences caused by travel disruption in Kent, Dover, in Kent. Because of all the lorries that'll be blocked up because the French won't let them through. And all the rest of it. Food shortages, exam chaos, fear, fear, fear. That's in The Observer. Which, of course, is a paper whose editorial policy, its stance, of course, is anti-Brexit. The Sunday Express says Tory MPs ask for Farage's mercy. The Sunday Express alleges the 10 Conservative MPs are preparing for a potential general election. And they have asked the influential Brexit donor Aaron Banks to convince Nigel Farage not to stand Brexit Party candidates against them. You know, with the possibility of diluting the vote and allowing a Labour or Lib Dem politician to win. Don't run Brexit Party candidates against us. We all want Brexit. Let's do it together and all the rest of it. The Mail on Sunday. Get new orders, Monsieur Barnier. So the Mail on Sunday says the UK is demanding that the European Union reopen talks on the withdrawal deal, which the European Union has said it will not. And the Mail on Sunday says Chief Negotiator Michel Barnier has no mandate because the new European Parliament was elected in May. Therefore, he can go and get new orders from the new European Parliament and he can renegotiate the withdrawal agreement. They say they will not. The Sunday Times leads with this. Boris Johnson drops £2 billion NHS cash bomb to woo female voters. Johnson wrote in today's Sunday Times. He has a column in today's Sunday Times. And he's announced a £2 billion blitz to help NHS doctors and patients. And the Times says this is the first shot across the bow in a summer of campaign. In a summer campaign of policy pledges. Basically, to get the Tory party, the Conservative Party, ready for an election in the autumn. So he's promising £1 billion to frontline services with another £850 million dedicated to upgrading 20 hospitals. All this money, where's it going to come from? Where's it going to come from? Well, Conservative Party Chairman James Cleverly was on Sky this morning. Cleverly, he's the Conservative Party Chairman, and he was asked by the presenter, where's the money coming from? James, where is this money coming from?
Well, one of the great advantages of having more people in work than ever before, the lowest unemployment since the 1970s, wages growing at their fastest rate for a decade, businesses looking to invest in the UK, is the economy is working. We want to make sure it works for people, and that means getting money into the NHS. Boris has made it absolutely clear he wants to see that money reaching the front line of the NHS, and that's what this commitment's about. Those 20 extra hospitals, getting equipment, making sure that people see that money working for them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not new hospitals. This is improvement to existing hospitals.
This is improvements to hospitals that we need to see, new equipment, repairs, upgrades, things that people will see in their everyday lives.
So where is the money coming from?
Well, as I say, the money's coming from economic growth. This is why it's so important that we keep the economy growing, that we do things like the Northern Powerhouse to make sure the economy...
Yeah, basically the money is coming from Enid Blyton's magic faraway tree. He's saying, is Johnson in the Times today, our policies will induce further growth in the economy. And we'll take that growth and those tax receipts and we'll throw all that money at the NHS. Now, that's a whopper that the Blue Fairy would be proud of. You know, the truth of the matter is he's going to borrow to fund the NHS, like every government that came before him, like every Prime Minister that came before him. He's going to borrow at interest from the Bank of England. The national debt's going to rise. Not just through the Bank of England. They'll sell government bonds to anybody who will buy them and increase the debt. And then in a couple of years' time, there'll be no money left in the Treasury and you'll have further programmes of austerity. This is how it works. I'm tired of telling you. This is the only radio programme in the UK or anywhere that explains this. This is how it works. You see, debt, enslavement, the debt, D-E-B-T economy, and the death, D-E-A-T-H economy, rolls on. They're liars, all of them. Every one of them is a pathological liar. They understand how it works. Anyway, James Cleverly, the Conservative Party chairman, was also asked, will there be an election? Because many newspapers today are running stories saying there is a guarantee of a general election this autumn. Come hell or high water. What does Cleverly say?
We are not going to initiate a general election. We have elections all the time.
He's lying.
We have elections
just
every
feels
spring.
Very election-y right now with all well, this spending going.
That's a brilliant presenter there. That's how journalism has evolved. It feels very election-y, says Neil Paterson, Sky's finest. It feels very election-y.
Going on.
No, what we've got is a new Prime Minister who, during the leadership campaign, made a number of explicit commitments, and he is setting about delivering on those commitments. Prime Ministers making good on their promises is a good thing, and that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And what we are ensuring is that the things that people have told us in the hustings around the country, in the online hustings.
Yeah, we'll just move on. It's exactly 15 minutes to the top of the air. James Cleverly there, the Conservative Party chairman. There's an outstanding article by Peter Hitchens in today's Daily Mail. Go to dailymail.co.uk after the show. I'm going to read some of it in a minute. And I could have done it after the Texas stuff, but I wanted to leave it till the end. I'll read it in a minute. It's very important. Hey, listen, on health. And, you know, I'll tell you something that I know to be true. In all the years I've worked in radio, television, production, presenting and all of that, the people of the country, I can say this without fear of contradiction, the thing that concerns people more than anything is the National Health Service. That's a fact. It's not because they've been manipulated into being concerned about it by the media. You might say, oh, well, there must be some truth to that. People are concerned about, people want to know, parents, okay, of young children, of not so young children, grandparents, people who are retired, they want to know that if they need urgent treatment, that it will be provided to them and fairly quickly at no cost to them. I think that's something I've learned over the years in this country. The NHS is genuinely something that people do worry about, do fret about and do talk about. So on health, Project Fear, right? We talked about Project Fear. So the Labour Party has been accused of fear-mongering this weekend again. Now, it's put out statements over the weekend that if Boris Johnson's government signs a trade agreement with the United States, the cost of medicine will spiral out of control here in the UK. That's what they're saying. That if we sign a free trade agreement with the United States, the cost of medicine here will go totally out of control. And I have a bit of sympathy with the concerns of Jonathan Ashworth. He's the Shadow Health Secretary, okay? And he was on Sky News this morning and he was asked about it. And I have some, as I said, I've got a bit of sympathy with his concerns. Are you scaremongering about medicine going up in price if we sign a trade deal with the US? Jonathan Ashworth.
It's not remotely scaremongering. This is what the US's own health secretary has said. The US have said that they want to force the NHS to buy American pharmaceuticals, American medicines at more expensive prices. So a trade deal with the US, not only will it mean more US firms coming in to run sections of our NHS, so privatising our NHS, and Hancock is already allowing £9 billion worth of contracts to go to the private sector, but it will mean the US pharmaceutical industry forcing us to buy more expensive drugs, asthma drugs, diabetes drugs, cancer drugs.
Why would that be any different under Labour, given you're both going to have to sign the same FTA?
No, because we are not going to sign a trade deal with the United States that would allow the US to come in, buy up the NHS and force the NHS to buy pharmaceuticals from US pharmaceuticals companies.
So we're not going to sign an FTA with the United States then under a Labour government?
We are not... we are not going to smash up the regulatory regime, the nice regulatory regime that we have in this country that has served us well for many, many years and which allows us to have pharmaceuticals, allows us to have medicines at reasonable prices. The US specifically want a trade deal to force us to buy more expensive medicines, and it will mean the NHS forking out more for insulin, for asthma medications, for cancer drugs. I don't believe that's fair, and Tory ministers should rule it out today.
Yeah, but they won't. Look, he's right. Now, do I have to keep saying it? I do, I suppose, because there are people listening to this for the first time all the time. I support none of them. I consider myself to be a socialist, a real socialist. See Salvador Allende, see the politics of Simon Bolivar, see Che Guevara, see Hugo Chavez. That's where I come from, right? So I've no time for any of them. Democracy is an illusion. We don't have democracy. Voting changes nothing. It never will, irrespective of who they put in front of you. Ever. We'll never get our way out of it by voting. And you need to listen back to some of my programmes to understand where I come from. So I have no time for any of them. But Ashworth is right here. Of course, while I believe the United Kingdom should be outside the European Union, every single country should be sovereign and should act. Every country should act in the best interests of the people of that country and not in the best interests of massive corporations and banks. No. Countries should act in the interest of its citizens, but countries haven't been acting in the interest of its citizens since forever, except of course places like Venezuela. Glaring examples of where leaders took decisions based on the best interests of everybody in that country. And we saw what happened to those leaders thereafter. We saw what the international community, again, through global corporations and through banks, did to those countries that had the temerity to act in the best interests of their citizens. Because I support leaving the European Union doesn't mean that I have a shred of sympathy or empathy with Boris Johnson. I've explained 1,000 times on this programme who Boris Johnson is, what he represents, and it is heinous. These guys do not want to take the UK out of the European Union for the betterment of you, me, and everybody else in the UK. Like, fuck, do they? They do not. They want to hand the country over to pacts like TTIP. Okay? Opening the country up. Opening it up, basically, like a box of jewels to the biggest corporations in the world to pick it off piece by piece. That's what they want to do. And he's right to be concerned about this if he really is Jonathan Ashworth. Of course, they want to make the NHS available to some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. But if you listened to the Richie Allen Show on Thursday, I explained in a monologue how they are already there. They're here anyway. Okay? They're here anyway. They just want to make it official. Talked about patient groups. You know, lobby groups in the UK, patient groups, look them up. Patient groups who lobby for certain medicines to be made available on the NHS. And these lobby groups based in the UK are being, they're almost like charity groups. They're being funded and they receive donations from some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. So they're inching their way in through the back door anyway. They're already here. So he's right. He's right. Sunday Mirror, race row over Strictly new judge. There's a show called Strictly Come Dancing, I think. It's got sister programs around the world. Dancing with the Stars in the United States, I believe it's called. They've appointed a new judge. She's a black woman called Mutsi Mabuse, or Mabuse. M-A-B-U-S-E. Forgive me for not being able to pronounce it. I've never heard the woman's name mentioned before. Mutsi Mabuse, I think, is her name anyway. She's going to be a judge. But a screaming queen called Louie Spence, forgive me for using the term screaming queen, has branded her a nobody and said that she was hired for diversity purposes. He said she was basically being used to tick boxes by the BBC. He's a dancing on ice guy, this guy Louie Spence. Don't know very much about him. But he said she's a nobody and it is absolutely strange and bewildering that she would be given the job. It should have been given to somebody called Anton Dubique or Dubeque, apparently. Ticking boxes. Is he right? I don't know. The BBC came out and said that's a load of bollocks or Horlicks. The BBC said no. The judge used to be on Germany strictly, and she's very, very good, and she's the best candidate to take over from Dame Darcy Bussell. Russell or Bussell, I have no idea. Are they ticking boxes? Well, we know the BBC's equality advisor, who's since resigned, a guy who was responsible for equality. About 18 months ago, he said the BBC didn't have enough lesbians. We'll have to get more lesbians on the air. Look, let me tell you how positive discrimination works. And I'm going to sound now like a misogynistic bastard. Let me tell you how it works, positive discrimination. It works in the case of Zoe Ball was given the job of replacing Chris Evans when Evans left Radio 2 Breakfast to go to Virgin. Now, Evans took over from Terry Wogan, who had the healthiest listening figures in BBC history. In the morning. Terry Wogan's one of the greatest broadcasters of all time. Not because he's Irish, because he is. The man understood intimately. He intimately understood the intimacy. There you go. He intimately understood the intimacy. Terry understood what radio is. It's a one-to-one medium. It's beautiful. It's me having a chat with you. We have a conversation. We have a little bit of music. We have a chat. We exchange a few opinions, me and you. Wogan was a genius. Right? Right. Jerry Ryan, Ireland, genius. Absolute genius. I worked with a woman many years ago in Waterford City. I think she still works occasionally for WLRFM. A woman called Maria McCann. Maria was a genius. She totally understood it as well. Genius, right? Right. They put Zoe Ball on the Chris Evans radio show after Evans left because she was a woman and only because she was a woman. The BBC decided. The gender pay gap row. Murders. Not enough women. We've got to put a woman in there. And they put Zoe Ball in there. And Zoe Ball is a very talented broadcaster, but she is shit on the radio. Absolutely shit. And she's lost a million listeners in 8 months' time. That's what positive discrimination does, children. Should be no such thing as positive discrimination. You hired the best man or woman for the job. Who's going to deliver? Who's going to deliver an audience? Who's going to deliver for the sponsors? Right, the BBC doesn't carry sponsorship, I know. But in commercial radio, who's going to deliver? Who's the best for the gig and give it to them? That's where it goes. Is this black woman ticking boxes? Well, only the BBC knows. I don't know, but we're seeing it right across society. Well, we got to preclude these guys, got to preclude them from the process because we don't have enough lesbians. We don't have enough LGBT people. So for this particular role, can't have any men or women. We can't have any straight men or women. That's just madness. And you know where it leads? It leads to a decrease in overall standards. Zoe Ball's radio show is crap. And she's a talented broadcaster. I hear it sometimes. It is crap. She was recently talking about snot. She had a 10-minute discussion with a guy about snot. Honest to God. Right? This Ladette bullshit from the 1990s. And that's what you get when you decide, no, we've got to put a woman in there. Put Zoe Ball in there. Yeah, she's longevity, bit of seniority. Put her in there. It's crap. That's how it goes. Right, there's a really interesting article by Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday today, but I'm not going to read it. I'm going to use it as the basis of an interview I'm going to do tomorrow, but it's about the police in this country and how Peter Hitchens believes that the police are becoming more of a threat to freedom in the UK than Vladimir Putin ever could. And he goes on to talk about how the police in the article have become oppressive, powerful, secretive and unjust. And he also goes on to talk about how progressive they've become and how now they're trying to police people's thoughts and hate crimes and all the rest of it. He also talks about how hyper-militarised the police have become in the UK. It's a fantastic bit of writing. Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday today. And I'm not going to get into it now because I have a lot to say about it. We'll do... I am with you tomorrow. It isn't a bank holiday tomorrow. I am with you tomorrow, Monday, right through the week, Tuesday, Wednesday. But this coming week will be my last week before my holiday. And I'll tell you more about that next week. I'm taking my holiday in mid-August. I'll tell you all about that next week. So join me tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. That's 5 o'clock UK time for the Richie Allen Show. I'll have a couple of guests. I'm going to have plenty to talk about. I'm going to run out of the programme today with Dire Straits and a song called Walk of Life. I have been Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. Back again tomorrow at 5. Look after yourselves and one another and have a fantastic Sunday. Get out there in the fresh air for yourselves, right? See you tomorrow. Bye now. Bye.